First case for argument is Murphy CE versus Fleet Mortgage, Mr. Zavis.
May it please the court, my name is John Zavis. I represent the two objector appellants here, Angela Perry and Michael Green. Today, we're here to take a look at a class action settlement that occurred in the district court in Illinois. That is, and I don't like to overuse superlative, but perhaps the worst class action settlement this court has seen since the Kamlowitz v. Bank of Boston case about 3 or 4 years ago.
It really sounds like a superlative.
In Kamlowitz, your brother Judge Easterbrook observed that the settling parties, quote, may even put one over on the court in a stage performance, close quote. That was a case where an objector wanted to get this court to look at a settlement, and the panel denied that, and the appellant asked for unbanked review, and the court denied that as well. In any event, that quote reappeared in the Amchem case, interestingly
enough. So your concern is that this information class just didn't get anything, is that it?
Yes, Your Honor, and in fact...
Should they have had their own lawyer? Is that the problem, is conflict of interest?
I'm not sure they needed their own lawyer, Your Honor, but I think there was certainly a conflict here that needed to be dealt with in some way other than to simply transfer wealth from what should have been their recovery to pay for the other class's recovery.
Mr. Zavis, what's the status of the Massachusetts case?
The Massachusetts case, the only thing of substance that's happened is that we have survived the motion to dismiss, and the case is currently stayed based on the outcome in this case.
So it is still stayed?
Yes, ma'am.
But it'd be extinguished if this is approved, right?
Well, Your Honor, we have some interesting arguments to go back to Massachusetts. First of all, we had one of our named plaintiffs in that case opted out, so we still have an individual action.
Yes, I know,
else.
But for non-opt-outs, they're extinguished, aren't they?
We would then have, I think we'd be forced to make a collateral attack on the settlement, Your Honor, which was what was recently done in the Kamlowitz case, well, the case that underlay the Kamlowitz case in the...
But the ordinary operation of the class settlement is to... So you have Massachusetts. Are there any other states that would provide a remedy of some sort for these information people?
You know, I'm a Massachusetts attorney, but my understanding
Pardon?
Is I'm a Massachusetts attorney and I can't speak to all states, but my understanding is that there are some states, and I believe Florida is one of them, where it's against the law, there's a statute that says you cannot do the pre-acquired telemarketing
here. So there's a remedy, is there? So you're Green and Perry, they're Massachusetts people.
Yes, Your Honor.
But there are non-Massachusetts people also in the information class.
The class we seek to represent in Massachusetts is Massachusetts residents only, but there are approximately 1.2 million people who I assume are spread over the entire country.
How do you respond to the contention that the damages for the information sharing only class would have amounted to 20 cents per person so that individual notice or disbursements would have been impractical? To say the least.
Well, Your Honor, I think, first of all, that's kind of a biased opinion of what the damages would have been. For example, Massachusetts, the damages are $25 per person, and then if we can prove that the violation is willful or knowing, it can be doubled or trebled.
You mean in any case it's $25 per person?
There's statutory damages that said if you are damaged, you get your actual damages are $25, whichever is greater. So that would just be one example. The other problem with that, Your Honor, is that it's important to realize that the people in the information sharing class didn't get notice. And both Amchem and Rule 23 make very clear that cost considerations as far as kind of the processing and mailing is not a grounds to deny people individual notice. It may be a grounds in a situation where you have a class that is somewhat difficult to identify. For example, all the people who purchased chewing gum and paid cash for it, be almost impossible to identify that class. But here we're talking about people that Fleet Mortgage Company loaned hundreds of thousands of dollars to per person, and then they secured that loan with the property, which coincidentally is the address where probably 99% of them still are today.
But they say they lost their records or destroyed them or something. Is that the only thing that's precluding notice?
It's not clear what they say, Your Honor. They say what happened is from the time the first lawsuits were filed against Fleet, they sold this block of business to Washington Mutual. And they claim for some reason they cannot get that information. They claim, A, that they don't have the information anymore, and they claim, B, that for some reason they couldn't get it back from Washington Mutual.
Mr. Zavis, doesn't this settlement direct the relief for those injured by the improper information sharing to those who were most adversely affected by the improper sharing, those who later incurred unwanted costs as a result of telemarketers' use of that information?
Well, Your Honor, it's not a question about who's hurt the worst. I mean, the bottom line is that Fleet now has, unless this court does something, Fleet now has a release against all 1.2 million people who got nothing other than, I guess, the satisfaction of knowing that their money went to some other people who were hurt worse. I mean, when I know the idea that we would collaterally attack this settlement if it was approved sounds a little silly, but you know, there's a real issue about whether there was any consideration paid for that release. So the more you peel the layers of the onion back here, the greater your problems are as far as just how you fairly deal with those people.
How do we deal with, speaking of dealing with, how do we deal with the admissions that Mr. Green, that he was informed that the information would be shared?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, that's kind of a red herring, because even if we had no lawsuit, Mr. Green, as a member of their class, would have every right to object, as he did, to say that this case was that this settlement is unfair. So I realize that Fleet spent a lot of time trying to prove that the merits of our case, which again have survived the motion to dismiss, are not that strong. But the reality is that if Mr. Green had no case, he'd still have every right.
I think what you're really arguing is that there's something fishy here, because a whole huge part of the class gets zero. Now, if they had gotten, say, $100,000 or something like that, then it'd be possible to argue whether that was reasonable or not. Is that?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, if they had gotten some amount of money and if they had gotten adequate notice, which we think here clearly has to be individual notice, then we're back to the kind of model that this court likes to work with, which is consumer sovereignty. You can get a notice in the mail. You can decide whether or not you want to take your 50 cents or not.
Is the only discussion by Judge Norgel what's in the appendix, these orders he issued?
As far as I know, yes, Your Honor.
He didn't have a discussion of the merits or anything. I didn't see anything about where he says, you know, well, this information class, they have no claim or something like that.
The appellees may be able to address that, Your Honor, but I believe we put everything that we were aware of.
Well, did he say anything more than the fact that he was deciding the case for the reasons that were stated in Fleet's memorandum and attachments, as well as the court's own research? Did he say, I mean, will we find anything more? I've searched, certainly.
I'm not aware of anything, Your Honor. In fact, one of the things that's very interesting, if you look at our appendix, page 27, final order and judgment approving class settlement, and referencing back to pulling a fast one on the court, Judge Norgel writes, due an adequate notice having been previously given to members of the class, blah, 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 of the benefits being provided to the members of the two respective classes pursuant to the settlement. Now, we would suggest that maybe something had been pulled over on Judge Norgel, because there are no benefits being provided to the information sharing subclass. So,
well, I mean, you know, he might have meant that it provides payment to those members of the info sharing class who were also members of the telemarketing class. I mean, that's certainly one way to read that, isn't it?
I think it's, I'm not saying there's no reading sufficiently tortured that wouldn't cover it, but I think that kind of points to some of the problem here that,
You put an arrow in my heart.
Due to the only attorney did that, I know. But due to the way the case was handled, I think it would be fair to say that the conflict between the two classes was never sufficiently highlighted by Fleet or class counsel. So it wasn't an issue Judge Norvo focused on initially.
Well, he didn't notice it, did he? I mean, he didn't say anything about a conflict.
No, he didn't, Your Honor.
Okay, you want to reserve your?
Yes, I would, Your Honor.
Okay. So, Mr. DiBianco?
May it please the Court, Gary DiBianco on behalf of Fleet Mortgage Corp. in this matter. Your Honors, after fully reviewing the objections to the settlement, Judge Norgel, who has a wealth of experience...
Well, his treatment of it was perfunctory, but I can't get beyond a very simple point. I don't see how you can have a class settlement where you release a huge number of claimants and they don't get anything at all. They don't get a penny. Don't get that.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we do believe...
You have a release without compensation.
Well, we believe that under the claims that were pled by the information-sharing class, that needs to be examined, what their remedy would have been had they proceeded to trial.
Well, Judge Norgel said, look, you have no case, you have absolutely no case, you have zero expected recovery, go away. That would be one thing, but, you know, they have this Massachusetts claim, they may have statutory damages in other states, they may have something. So you'd think a lawyer who is worth his salt would say, well, these information people, they don't have much damages and they're hard to notify, but they have to get something. They have to get some share of the recovery. Otherwise, it looks as if what the lawyers were doing were, they were getting a recovery for the other people by giving a release for, you know, a million odd people to the defendants. So they were selling one group down the river for the benefit of the other.
Your Honor,
it's like a conflict of interest and an unreasonable settlement.
Fleet Mortgage Corp. agreed to disgorge profits
Look, one of the great fallacies in your brief is your suggestion that disgorgement is the only remedy in cases like this. You know, disgorgement, restitution, that's an alternative remedy. The standard remedy is damages. If you have damages, you can't be told, well, you don't get anything because the defendant disgorged his profits. You still have your damages.
No representative plaintiff, no objector, including Mr. Green, identified any theory of actual damages.
If the judge said, look, there is no basis on which this information class can obtain a remedy, fine. But he didn't say that.
Your Honor, we believe it was clear to him from the briefs and
in the record. Why didn't he say something?
He referred to the arguments that were made in Fleet's
brief. Well, we keep emphasizing that because of the kind of pervasive conflict of interest in class action litigation, the Reynolds case, the judge has to address these issues carefully.
Your Honor,
nothing in his kind of boilerplate orders which suggests that he recognized this paradox of you have a huge subclass that's getting absolutely nothing, represented by a lawyer who doesn't represent the subclass exclusively, but is representing another class with a conflicting interest.
Your Honor, this settlement was negotiated with four separate groups of class lawyers in four separate cases, and there are representative plaintiffs who approved the settlement who were members of only the information sharing class.
How could they do that? How could a rational class member approve a settlement that gives him zero?
The remedies that were sought by these class members in information sharing were to get FMC to stop the challenge practice and disgorge its profits. No one pled an actual damages theory.
But not disgorge it to them. So, as I say, what was their lawyer saying to them? Look, settle, give them a release, get nothing in exchange. Did the lawyer ever say that to a client?
The structure of the settlement is such that the $243,000 goes to the fund to pay both information sharing and telemarketing class members who showed that they were damaged.
Were there any class representatives who were members of the information sharing class, but not the telemarketing class.
There were, Your Honor. Mr. Mirfasihi was, and there several plaintiffs in the class in Minnesota, the Fierhees, were members of only the information sharing class, not the telemarketing.
So when the appellants argue that you used class representative with telemarketing claims to represent those with information sharing only claims,
we believe that's inaccurate,
that's
Your
inaccurate.
Honor. We believe that it is. There are class representatives of
But what did the class representatives get in exchange for giving up their claims?
They got Fleet to give up the money.
No, but what did they get?
They did not get a direct payment.
What do you mean direct? Did they get an indirect payment?
There was money that went into the fund.
But the payment didn't go to them directly or indirectly. They got nothing. Now, what's the theory under which you give a release for nothing? What's the basis for that?
The theory is that their causes of action were causes of action for disgorgement and injunction.
No, because they may have an entitlement to statutory damages.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that was not pled in any of the complaints and that the objectors have not met their burden in the Mexico money transfer litigation to show the district court that there was even a possibility of statutory damages. Fleet strenuously...
But there clearly is in Massachusetts and probably in other states. There are usually remedies for violating people's rights.
Well,
and where does Judge Norgel discuss this and say, no remedy, wasn't pled, et cetera, et cetera. This class is going nowhere.
We believe that under the Mexico money transfer litigation case, it was objector's burden to show that there was a theory out there that was viable that could have provided additional recovery. They failed to do it. It wasn't Judge Norgel's burden.
Well, why isn't the Massachusetts law a theory for recovery?
Because under Massachusetts law, statutory damages are only available if individuals follow the proper notice and demand.
Okay, but that's the merits. Now, and again, Judge Norgel didn't address the merits.
We don't believe that the merits were presented to him by objectors, which was their burden. But the merits are important because the merits are the only one.
It's important when the judge makes a judgment about the merits, but he didn't do that.
Will we find anything more than the question that I asked of Mr. Zavis, in other words, that he decided it for the reasons that were stated in your memorandum and the attachments and by the court's own research. Will we find anything more?
You'll find Judge Norgel issued several orders on his oral rulings, and one of them is a single page, single spaced, setting forth of his reasons incorporating our memorandum. There's also the final approval order. That's what is in the record. The record is clearly, the reasons are clearly set forth both in Fleet's brief and in the attachments to Fleet's brief that Judge Norgel referred to. As to this issue of notice, the notice was the best practicable under the circumstances. The record is undisputed that notice was provided to individual members of both the information sharing class and the telemarketing class who could be identified from Fleet Mortgage Corp's records.
In your brief, you said that notice was sent to 190,000 members of the information sharing class. Were those persons members of the information sharing class only, or were they the ones who were also members of the telemarketing class?
They're members of both classes. The other individuals who were members solely of the information sharing class could not be identified from Fleet's records, and accordingly, under Supreme Court and this Court's case law.
That's kind of odd, because they are customers of Fleet.
Fleet did not share information regarding all of its customers, and there was significant turnover of mortgages. Accordingly, Fleet could not identify.
What happened to the records?
Fleet, when it shared the information, simply didn't retain copies of the data tapes at the time they were shared with third parties.
Help me with this, because as I read the objector's brief, their they're concerned with only members of the information sharing class who were not also in the telemarketing class. Were there any individual notices sent to those persons?
No, Your Honor, although it's possible that there were notices sent to individuals who turned out not to be in the telemarketing class, but from the records, it was individuals in the telemarketing information sharing.
And would that be, so that's that million odd people, and you don't have any records of them, or you don't have complete records?
We don't have records of who's...
Zero records.
Zero records of individuals whose information was shared.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bianco. Mr. Giskin?
May it please the court, my name is Oren Giskin. I'm counsel for Plaintiff Miles Mirfasihi and the class below.
And he or she, is it a he or a she?
It's a he.
And he's a member just of the information class?
That's correct, yeah.
And he's here defending his zero recovery? That's interesting.
We would not describe it as a zero recovery.
For Mirfasihi? What is his name? Mirfasihi. What did Mirfasihi get out of the settlement?
Mr. Mirfasihi did not have any monetary damages. So what he and the rest of the information sharing class who did not have monetary damages received was two things. They got the defendant to stop the practice, and they got the defendant to give up his profits from the practice. So to the extent that
this kind of spite thing, Mirfasihi has the satisfaction of knowing that Fleet has been sued and paid someone else?
There have been a few of these information sharing cases throughout the country.
Did Mirfasihi get a payment for being a class representative?
Mm-hmm. He did, like the other class representatives.
And was that $25? Or $250?
$250.
So he did get $250.
Well, he will if the settlement is through.
So he may.
So he gets $250 for defending a settlement that gives his class nothing.
Neither he nor I would agree.
So in other words, he gets $250 for having given a release of a million odd people for nothing.
He received $250 for stepping forward to represent
the class. Stepping forward, represent, and getting nothing for the class. That's quite a representation. How can you get $250 for getting... How can you be paid $250 for having generated absolutely nothing for his class?
Well, they're giving up the... I mean, they're getting Fleet to stop the practice.
That is one of the remedies, and he succeeded in getting some monetary compensation for those members of the class, the information sharing class, that had actual monetary damages.
No, but they're members of the other class.
They're members of both classes.
No, but Mirfasihi is not a member of the telemarketing class.
Correct.
He's a representative of the information people who were not dunned by telemarketers. So for the people situated like himself, he didn't get anything.
The information which was shared here was information such as the amount of the loan, in some instances the account number. This is the sort of information that you don't want shared. It's annoying, and you'd like the person who's sharing this information to stop it. This is a practical settlement. Not everybody is going to get money for this practice. In what we did here is we...
Well, why did you get an injunction?
Effectively, he did, because...
Effectively? In other words, he didn't.
Well, Fleet is no longer in this business, so they can no longer share it. Mortgage customers.
Well, wait a second. You said, oh, Mirfasihi, great. He did a great job. He got Fleet to stop this. Now it turns out Fleet isn't in the business. Did Mirfasihi drive Fleet out of the business? Is that what he did? Is that his triumph?
That's not my understanding.
Well, then how do you get an injunction?
There is no formal injunction.
There's no injunction, period, because the company is no longer in business, which has nothing to do with Mirfasihi.
That's correct.
He got nothing for his claim. He didn't get a cessation of Fleet's illegal practices, Fleet went out of the business.
Fleet went out of the business.
So our most that he got was money for other people, not for people like himself, and for this he's paid $250.
What's the timing? When did... What would the timing be?
This case was filed in February of 2001. I believe Fleet sold its mortgage business in June 2001.
Say it again.
Complaint was filed in February of 2001. The Fleet sold its mortgage business, to my knowledge, in June of 2001.
They didn't sell it because of the suit.
Not to my knowledge, no.
So Mir Fasighi had absolutely nothing to do with the cessation of his illegal practice.
Not directly.
Not indirectly. What's the indirect?
Well, he filed a lawsuit challenging...
But the lawsuit, you said, didn't cause Fleet to go out of business.
That's correct.
So it had no effect on Fleet.
How can you be sure it didn't cause him to go out of business? How can you defend... I mean, how do you know that that wasn't one of the things that went into the decision?
I have no knowledge. I have seen nothing to suggest it was. That's the basis for my answer.
Have you seen anything to suggest it wasn't?
No, I haven't. Thank you.
Do you have any... I interrupted you a lot. If you wanted another minute, you may have it.
My main point here was this was a practical settlement that followed the appropriate procedures. It was negotiated at arm's length. There's nothing to suggest anything improper here. We presented the settlement to Judge Norgel. He gave preliminary approval. He gave notice to the class. And the only person to come forward and complain about the fact that the information sharing class got no money is Mr. Zavez. And I think the record is clear that Mr. Zavez's goal is to pursue his case in Massachusetts, even if it's at the risk of depriving the class here, the telemarketing class, and certain members of the
information. How much money did the class lawyers get?
The fee in this case was $750,000.
So they got three times the disgorgement.
The fee represents, the fee which is less than the lodestar of the counsel in the case, represents...
They didn't achieve anything.
Well...
Except this disgorgement.
They did achieve a settlement of $2.4 million for refunds for members of the telemarketing class, who are also members of the information sharing class.
Oh, besides the disgorgement of profits, there was a refund.
Yes, it was an elaborate procedure which provided refunds from $10 to $135 per class member.
About 22% attorney's fees, correct?
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
The reason that number is...
It's fine for them. The problem is they did it by selling out, in part by selling out the other class.
Well, the claims of the information sharing class face significant hurdles. It was an evaluation by counsel, the likelihood of success.
Is there a lawyer who represented just the information class people?
No, there's not.
That lawyer would have gotten zero fees. Right.
Well, not in my opinion. That lawyer would have been entitled to fees the same as everyone else. Because
but if that class had had its own lawyer, he certainly wouldn't have settled for zero recovery. He wouldn't get a very good fee for getting nothing.
Well, it's a bit of speculation on my part, but in evaluating the claims, the information sharing resulted in actual damages for certain people. Those are the people we focused on getting money back.
The information sharing, though, resulted in statutory damages for other people, and they dealt away that right for zero. Now, that's the basic problem.
I'm not aware of any cases. I'm not an expert on Massachusetts law, but I'm not aware of any cases.
Yes, I know, and you're not, and Judge Norgel isn't. Anyway, Judge Norgel didn't discuss Massachusetts law in the realm of speculation. Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Zavis, how much time do you have? 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just wanted to cover a few things quickly. One is, as the court has already learned, it was economically rational for the class reps to settle the case because they got paid $250. So that explains that piece of it.
I think the most damaging thing your opponent said, so maybe you want to address this, is that he says, well, you didn't even allege, your people didn't even allege that there was a violation of Massachusetts law. Maybe you're telling us that you didn't tell Judge Norgal.
Where will we find it?
Your Honor, we filed an objection with Judge Norgal that I thought clearly set that out, and also set out that we thought we had a class action because Fleet opposed it on the grounds that a class hadn't been certified yet, which was true.
So you argued Massachusetts law to Judge Norgal?
I can't tell you off the top of my head, but that's my memory, and that it would be in the record as part of our objection.
Right. But he didn't discuss it.
The other things I wanted to point out very quickly, Your Honor, is first of all, the recovery is not $2.4 million. The recovery is not to exceed $2.4 million. The only amount of money that will guaranteed be paid here is the $243,000 disgorgement plus the attorney's fees. And it's also written in a somewhat strange way where I think if the $243,000 isn't used up, it goes pro rata to the people that make claims. So I guess in theory, one person could make an information sharing claim and get all $243,000, but that's just an aside. Again, if you think about what's guaranteed, the attorneys are getting three quarters of it. The other issue I want to talk very briefly, Mr. Giskin made the claim that they followed all the correct procedures. Well, this court's already denied their motion to dismiss this appeal on the grounds that we failed to file a bond. And I think that's another place where the court might want to think about rational economic actors. What happened in this case is that Judge Norgal signed off on an order that said anybody who appeals this case has to file a $3.2 million bond, which, by the way, is higher than what they claim is the maximum conceivable recovery, based on the theory that Fleet wouldn't be around to pay the class if our appeal was later turned out to be unsuccessful. Well, first of all, Fleet's around, so that piece of it is factually incorrect. But secondly, just as a matter of the most basic first-year law, you don't get to dismiss an appeal for failure to file a bond. And third, as a matter of most common sense high school economics, in a case where the Fleet concedes that the largest possible recovery is $135 per person, that I query, who would put up $3.2 million in order to challenge that? Even if you could afford it.
When you say the objections, are you talking about the joint filing of objections?
I'd have to look at my record for a second.
Because...
But we filed both objections and a motion to intervene, and we filed a memorandum in support of it.
Right. Because at page 5 of your memorandum, you say... Further, claims such as those under TILA and certain consumer fraud statutes, such as that of Massachusetts, allow for statutory damages. Is that
right, Ron,
the entirety of the Massachusetts law that
it may have been, Your Honor,
presented?
Again, even if we had no claim, or even if there was no Massachusetts law issue here, as I think Judge Posner pointed out correctly, damages to some extent could be, each person could have individual damages. If a person had received individual notice saying, by the way, your case against Fleet has been settled and you're getting nothing unless you want to opt out, there could very well be, out of a million people, you know, a significant number of people that would feel that they had suffered damages. It's peculiar to them, and they would want to bring an individual action, and they could find an attorney that would be willing to do that. But again, all that disappears because if this settlement is approved, because all 1.2 million people have just released their claims for nothing, without being told.
Thank you, Mr. Zavin.
Thank you
to both sides, all three sides. Next case for argument is...